Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where you, the investor, get to listen as Chris Perry grills the best and the brightest in the corporate sector to help you find out who's the wheat and who's the chaff. Listen in.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
Welcome to the Equity Guru podcast. My name is Chris Perry, where we talk to the leaders of the Canadian small cap space about what they're getting up to. We are talking to Mr. Bharat Parashar, CEO of Ceylon Graphite. Ceylon's been a client of ours for a while. We've been watching it eagerly open up into the Sri Lankan graphite space, which we think is really interesting because that country is really moving up quickly, and graphite as a sector is undersupplied. And so, Bharat, welcome to the show. And if you could give us the 30,000-foot view of what Ceylon Graphite is.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris. Ceylon Graphite, I suppose, in Canadian terminology, would be a small junior miner. We're a Canadian-listed company, but all our assets are in Sri Lanka. And by assets, I mean our mines. We, through unique meeting of various people, started looking into the graphite space in Sri Lanka several years ago and started silently looking at what graphite was all about. And it came to our knowledge that Sri Lanka was the largest graphite producer in the world before the Second World War. And after that, it sort of flitted away. As you know, before the Second World War, Sri Lanka was colonized by the British. And as the British left to go and do their own thing after the Second World War, the price of graphite and its uses were limited. Plus, the whole mining industry was at a very different stage of its development. There was not much scope for the industry to grow, and this whole industry basically went literally underground. There were pits and mines all around Sri Lanka that were basically left to go nature's way, got filled up with garbage, and were left alone. From Ceylon Graphite's perspective, when we learned about this opportunity, we went to the GSMB, which is the Geological Survey and Mines Bureau of Sri Lanka, and the regulator of all mining in Sri Lanka, and asked them if they had any information on graphite mining. And definitely they did. They showed us a handmade map with little dots, which were previous graphite sites all around the country. And in Sri Lanka, they sort of divide the country into grids, 1 square kilometer grids, and you go and you can basically get a concession for these grids over for a 30 to 50 year period, depending on how you apply. So what we did, and that's me and some my co-founders, who all have had experience in Sri Lanka, we got a couple of guys on motorbicycles to go out to these sites to see if there were old signs of mines around. And by that I mean, were there pits? Was there any dump around the site? And much to our surprise, wherever the guy on the motorcycle went, he took photographs of existing, not existing pits, but historical pits, right, and showed dump around the place. And it's interesting to note that, you know, most of Sri Lankan graphite mining in the past was done in the overburden. And by that, I mean in the mud. And when they hit the rock, which was maybe 40 feet, 50, some places 60 feet down, they stopped because the ability to go into the rock was limited, and it was exceptionally expensive. So if you go a whole circle, that sort of really suits modern time opportunity, because that told us that effectively that there was lots of graphite in the rock all around Sri Lanka. And in today's world, we know that graphite in the rock is much better than graphite in the overburden, because graphite in the mud gets weathered. Mm-hmm. So we went to the GSMB and acquired 116 initially, and now are up to 121 grids around the country, and have slowly started developing these. And that's where we are right now.
That's a lot of grids. How are you working through that potential list of projects? Is it exploring everywhere, or are you focused in on the couple that you really know are going to be sweet?
Well, to be very honest, there was no scientific process for the first site, which was K1. which I'll talk about a lot. It's in Karasnagala, in sort of central Sri Lanka. It was a site that the GSMB themselves told us, oh, you know, this might be a good site, have a look at it. So we started with that, but the rest of them, the rest of the other four sites that we have started, three sites we are developing, are all based on geological surveys. We bought a VLF machine, which is very much like a treasure hunting metal detector, where you put radio waves underground and you get aberrations that come up. And when you can then map the area and you can see where there are where there is potential for graphite. So you start off based on that and then you start drilling. So right now, you know, we've got one site, which is our K1 site, which is, oh, we had, you know, we found the, we got to the site, we did some initial drilling. We found a huge potential shaft. We cleaned down the shaft all the way to 150 feet, which is the depth of the shaft. And from there, we've gone out on various drives and winzes. A drive is when you follow a vein. A winze is between two drives, basically like a sort of a connecting tunnel. And we are down to about 250 feet. We found numerous huge veins. And I'm sure if anyone looks at our website, you'll see some of the most amazing underground veins that have been discovered. And this is in the shaft and in the tunnels that we've been digging there. And obviously, we've got a huge series of veins that we've discovered through the drilling process, which is the conventional method. And at K1 right now, we are at a stage where we have applied for a mining license, which is what you need to start using, you know, the blasting technology to start production. And we are at the cusp of getting our license. I don't want to say too much about when we'll get it. In case it puts a black omen on anything that's coming out. You know, next week is Sri Lanka is shut for the Sri Lankan New Year, the Buddhist New Year, and then the Tamil New Year and Good Friday. So all these holidays, every year, sort of in March, you have 1 week that it's shut. And I am with my anything that I could cross. I will have my fingers crossed that you know the we get our environmental clearance right after that, and that's the last stop on the K1 mining license. And then hopefully early May we should have a mining license and go into production. I mean, we are the cusp of production on two sites. So this is the K1 site, which we are really. Which is, if you go onto our website again, you'll see a 3D diagram of sort of where and what we're doing. Another fabulous site is our M1 site, which is a little up north near the old Sri Lankan Kahataga mine. And people say it's on the same fault, but you know, I'm not a geologist to that extent, so I can't tell you. Our M1 mine, and again on our website, you can see has on the surface a 10 and a half foot vein.
That's a big chunky vein.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, nobody has seen such a vein anywhere in the world.
Hmm. With the price of exploring in Sri Lanka so inexpensive, to drill is a lot cheaper than it is to drill over here, and production also being inexpensive, does it almost make sense to just get in there and as soon as you can just start digging everywhere, as opposed to trying to be precise and figuring out exactly what has the highest grade?
No, grade from a grade perspective, Chris, Sri Lankan graphite, as you know, is the purest natural graphite on the planet, in situ. By that I mean in the ground, when you take it out, and graphite is measured in terms of carbon content. Our carbon content is always above 90%. And to become marketable, it has to only be upgraded to 99.95. Okay. So our upgrading is small compared to the rest of the world, where you're looking at and the other big difference is, and I apologize for being all over the place, is that there are basically three large kinds of graphite in the world: vein graphite, which is only in Sri Lanka, which is literally like the vein in your arms or in your body, where It's a tube of solid mass of graphite coming up from the core of the Earth to the surface. Other main graphite is flake graphite. And flake graphite is like the old Western movies where the guy with the sort of stone in his hand would knock off a piece of the graphite, right?
Right.
That process is you mine the ore and then you separate the ore from the flake. So you've got to go through a separating process. And the average graphite content of that graphite is 40 to 50% carbon, right? So we are vastly superior graphite. So our sort of upgrading is much less.
Cost and the time and the technology that it takes to make that other graphite acceptable is much larger and in much more expensive jurisdictions than you have here, where you have a relatively small process.
The other thing your listeners must understand is there'll be three or four graphite companies that come start production over the next couple of years, and we are one of them. Okay, and to give you an example, the most recent one that's come to market is one in Mozambique called Syrah, or I think as the Australians call it, it's like a wine. I don't know why they name graphite broken, but they do. And that has cost the project cost is $650 million.
Okay.
And they will produce about 60, 70,000 tons of graphite a year. Now, true, our graphite, my first site will only produce around 4,000 tons a year. But my cost per mine is $2 million.
That's crazy. $2 million to get a producing mine.
Absolutely. And my second mine, which I'd like to talk about, the M1, which you said, why aren't we just digging? That's exactly what we're doing. We've done a resistivity study, and we're going straight into the caravan. You know, the cave is there. It's full of graphite. This 10-foot vein, I've trenched it down 30 feet. It's still 10 feet. Now, obviously, people say, oh, it might pinch. Yeah, but according to our computation, so we're just going to dig a straight at it in there, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why our costs are so much less. And if we have 121 grids, let's say I even do 30 or 20 sites over the next 5 years, 20 mm-hmm. sites at say 4,000 to 6,000 tons a year will be double the size of Syrah for half. I mean, $40 million, $50 million. You know?
Yeah.
And the economics are just absurd. That's why we are so thrilled about what we have found and the pace at which we are going forward. You know, we've had the graphite tested by the best labs in the world, and they have certified us both as battery marketable, which means 99.95% upgradable, and that our graphite meets, you know, all the parameters for spherical graphite.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast with your host, Chris Perry.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
I guess there's a bit of a stigma on the graphite market in general, just because over the last 5-6 years, you know, graphite has always been threatening to make a bit of a comeback. But there's a lot more graphite plays out there than projects, if you know what I mean. There's a little, it got bounced around a little bit.
And the reason is that, you know, there's a lot in the junior mining sector where people go into, they find some flake graphite. But they just, to be able to raise the project finance or whatever they call it, the financing is pretty tough. Unless you have a project like, or a series of projects like ours. But the other thing I got to tell you, Chris, is what has changed dramatically is decarbonization has taken place in the energy storage and transportation sector like nothing before. And graphite is the new oil. You know, we've all talked about renewable energy, batteries, this, that, and the other. But unless you can store energy or improve the ability to store energy, this is never going to take off. And that is now coming to fore. As you look at the markets today, your listeners will be interested to know that the graphite, the anode market. So everybody talks about EVs, these electric vehicles and batteries. And this is just one small sector of the graphite market. The demand for anodes has gone up from 85,000 tons in 2015 to about 160,000 tons now, and expected to grow to about 1.8 million tons in 2028. I mean, there's seven times the market is going to increase.
Does the existing world graphite supply, is it able to deal with that sort of pickup?
No.
Or does it need what you've got?
Therefore, whatever we, you know, everybody asks me, do I have long-term contracts in place? Yeah. It's too early for that. I first got to get into production. Whatever I produce, in whatever form I produce it, will sell. And what are the forms of selling? You basically can sell raw graphite, which is what I get out of the earth, right? And I get out of the earth an average of around 95% carbon content. And I can sell it as bricks, which is silly to do because that's around $2,000. For Sri Lankan graphite, it's around $2,500 a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And if I upgrade it to 99.95%, I can sell it for about $5,500 a ton. Mm. Now, my costs of taking graphite out of the earth on a very conservative basis, to put it lightly, are $200 a ton. And let's assume I even take $200 a ton to upgrade it. That's $400 a ton out of 5,500. My, you know, 5% I give to the Sri Lankan government and 5% they selling and administrative costs. So let's say, what the hell, I make $4,000 a ton.
Mm-hmm.
$4,000 a ton times, say, 50,000 tons is you know, $200 million straight EBITDA.
For a $2 million mine?
No, that's for a $20 million, $30 million mine, right?
Oh, sorry.
Several mines. Still. For each mine, it'll be, say, for one $2 million mine, it'll be about $20 million. Right? So it's... You're still looking at numbers that are crazy.
Yeah. And the government there, you know, by virtue of the fact that they handed essentially the nation's graphite supply to you, I would imagine that they're pretty eager to give you the permitting that you need to get this stuff up and running.
You know, I'd say that the Sri Lankan government has been very open about it. There's nothing that's opaque. It's pretty, yeah. I do get a little frustrated with the speed of the approvals, but you know, it is what it is, and you've got to learn to live with it.
As a country, it's starting to really accelerate towards more of a developing world model than a third world model that it might have been previously. How are you finding the infrastructure side of things there for when you do start pulling things out of the ground?
From my perspective, it's such a small country, right? So even if I have to truck to the port. I mean, I'll obviously truck first to my upgrading processing company site and then to the port. Will be at the maximum maybe 100 miles.
Yeah.
But I'm 5 kilometers from the railhead and I will just fill up a rail, you know, one of the cargo trucks on the and the container and put it onto the railhead. Onto the rail car, and it'll just go to the port side straight away. I have everything I need to do whatever I need to do. Yes, in terms of where Sri Lanka is located, you have positive and negative. The positive is I'm so close to China, Japan, and Korea, which has 60% of the world's battery market.
Right.
But from the other side of the coin, it rains a lot. So, you know, you've got, in mining, the biggest issue you have is dewatering. So I got to deal with that. But, you know, we figured out how to deal with it.
Yeah, it's nice to have like one manageable issue rather than, you know, the many, many potential issues you would have in Africa or, you know, price-wise in the Western world.
That's right. That's right.
So if you had your magic wand and suddenly had access to $40 million, would you be dotting new mines all over the landscape or... is there reason to just take it more deliberately?
No. If I had $10 million more, I'd have five more minds. If I had $20 million, I'd have 10 more minds going. Because I can go and show you where the mines are.
Yeah.
I will admit, I have not been to all 121 sites, but I've been to about 75, 80 of them. And I can see the pits. I can see the old main shaft. And you can just see graphite all around the place.
Mm.
And you just go. I mean, my P1 site, which is the third site which we started off, we found a small piece of graphite on surface. So we started digging around it, like, you know, a trench. Mm-hmm. And again, you'll see on the website, we found a 35-foot long, 2 feet wide, solid piece of graphite, which then sort of veers like an L shape into the ground. And where do you get this stuff, you know?
That's crazy.
I've got a shaft nearby, and we had 65 feet down in that. My miner says maybe 180 feet, maybe 200 feet shaft we'll get to. So we are cleaning, taking out all the old garbage. And once we get to the bottom, then I'll do a temporary fix on the shaft with lumber. And once we find big veins, and we found numerous veins all the way down. I mean, if somebody, you know, got the guts enough to come down a ladder with me, you can see this stuff, you know, it's just sticking out of the ground at 2 feet of graphite. Boom. I mean, I don't know how far you can go with it, but it's there.
So considering the potential there and considering like how many mines you could have going at once without really impacting your long-term potential, would it make sense to JV with another company or to you know, go in with some larger entities to get this thing moving quicker? Or do you just sort of look at it as, you know, the money's going to come in anyway?
No. So. You make an excellent point, something that we grapple with every day.
Yeah.
The big issue is how greedy am I and my other shareholders, right? Because you would have seen the stock, it hasn't moved. God willing, it'll take a big jump after we go into production on the first mine, which will be in a month or two. So, you know, we'll be moving then, hopefully. But the issue becomes, if somebody comes in right now, what value is he going to give to me? So as I, you know, we go to all the mining shows, and I was at Mines and Money in Hong Kong last week. And one of the guys asked me the same question. He said, if I give you $10 million, how much of your company will you give me? And my sort of first reaction to him was zero. I'll do a deal with you where I'll do a loan, and I'll, since you only want an equity upside, I'll give you a stock appreciation right. And he said, but no, I'm not that. I'm like you, I'm greedy. So I want a part of your company. So I said, okay, let's sit down and talk about it. But because I believe that for me to be able to grow this business to its full potential, we're going to have to let go a lot of the current ownership, right?
Sure.
And people, if I could get, as you very politely said, $40-50 million, God, that'll be a windfall. In 2 years, we'll be maybe the biggest producer in the world.
You're only at an $8 million market cap right now. So the opportunity for someone who had $40 million would be to just take you out and own the whole thing.
No, I wouldn't give him that. He could do that for 100 or 200. And you might know my main shareholder, Sasha Jacob, and I don't.
Indeed.
I don't think he will ever permit that. But you make a good point. We will have to sooner or later tie up with capital source.
Yeah.
And the risk they will take then, though, is that they are giving away a person or a group of people who have created this and who can operate in the conditions,
mm-hmm.
know how to deal with the system, and they'll have to learn it themselves if they take it all over. But the ideal thing would be to tie up in a joint venture, as you say, or put a new company together with everybody sharing the pot and go for it. I could not stress more on that. If somebody really, particularly, Chris, given the fact that we see, you know, the graphite demand tsunami coming,
yeah.
This is the time to put the money in.
Yeah. Well, certainly, I've talked to a lot of graphite companies in the West, in North America, who've said, you know, it's going to happen eventually. The Chinese market isn't exactly reliable. It's drying up. It's a strategic metal. Military perspective, the US government needs a bunch of it. So any day now. But that's been for 3 or 4 years, it's been an any day now thing. And a lot of those companies, in order to get to production, they need to raise hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes.
Whereas you're not in that place at all.
And if you look at Benchmark Minerals' latest reports, you'll see that China had just become a net importer of graphite. And the U.S. military, there was a big congressional hearing in February, and somebody has sold most of their graphite reserve. And so they're going to come back into the market to start reacquiring. As you know, graphite is a great conductor of heat, and they need it for all their weaponry. So they're going to be buying too. How much this will drive up the price, only the good Lord knows.
Yeah.
But I think we are pretty well on the side of demand, on the commodity cycle of graphite demand looking upwards.
I would think that would make sense. And for what you're doing here, the limitation on risk is incredible. You know, anytime you can just basically sweep the surface and see exactly where you should be digging, that's a lot more attractive than we're going to spend the next 3 years sticking drills in the ground and see what we get. I would almost hazard to suggest that your company is mining for the impatient, for people who don't want to spend 7 years waiting for results. You guys are able to just dig straight in there and get this thing moving at a really quick pace and live or die on what you find in the ground without that much risk that you're going to be investing more than you're going to be getting back.
Absolutely. You know, and we are learning as we go forward. So our first mine was a little slow, but now the second and third are really moving at a quick pace. We know how to look at a site, drill 3 or 4 holes and say, you know, the graphite veins here are too thin. We'll come back to this later. We've done some drilling here. Let's move on to something that's more fertile. We now know how to say we're too close to humanity. There are too many environmental issues. Let's stay away from that side and move to this side. And, and you know, we've got a much better feel for how to move forward.
That's pretty great. You know, a lot of the newer investors are averse to investing in resources because of the timelines that are involved. And a lot of the time also the guesswork. And sometimes that guesswork comes into not just where you're going to stick a drill in the ground, but is anyone going to stick a drill in the ground? So any deal that can move at a fast clip where, you know, you can fail inexpensively and move to the next one without too much problem. You know, I invest in a lot of resource companies where they'll spend $2 million just on drilling. For you to be able to spend $2 million to get to production is next level stuff. So I'm eager to see what happens when this story starts to really get out there in the general market.
I think, Chris, if you have the time, maybe in June, early June.
Yeah.
God willing, we should have a chat again. And if I have my mining license, which is basically the license to blast and able to sell the product without having to get approval for every kilo I send out of the country, you know, it'll be a different story. We are positioned to do everything. We've redone the shaft. I've put concrete everywhere in overburden till I hit the rock. We're just sitting, waiting for the final license to be signed.
Which could happen any day. And when it does, a whole new realm of investor is liable to enter the scene. Well, certainly, Sasha Jacob's been around for a while and knows how to make money for people. So this is something that he and I have been talking about for several years now. And again, everything that he said was going to happen with this thing, it seems has absolutely happened. So it's a good de-risked, low downside, high upside entry into the mining world, especially in a part of mining that furthers the battery metal market. I'm driving around in Vancouver looking at gas prices going insane and thinking it's time to get an electric vehicle. And if I'm getting an electric vehicle, then I think, you know, there's got to be millions more that are. So this is going to be something that over the next few years is going to get more and more important. And you've got a head start on everybody.
I hope so. I think we are pretty well positioned to do that, both from a production perspective and geographically. You know, our next phase is, I suppose, to, as soon as I get my mining license in place, to start talking seriously to the Panasonics, the Teslas, the LGs, the Samsungs of this world, SK Telecom, to see how we can do something with them.
That would be something else. That's what I think a lot of the potential investor market is waiting for, is that time when the end users start to get involved in the production side of thing. That should really charge the market in ways that we haven't seen before.
Yes, sir. That would be great.
Yes. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. As you say, let's talk in a month or so and see where things are going. Certainly the market has a look and see approach that appears to have been taken for the last year. But, you know, when those mining permits come and the mining happens soon after, that tends to really jet start a stock. So I've got my stock sitting waiting in eager anticipation. You just keep doing what you do.
Thank you very much.
Talk soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.